David, whether you have a few weeks old puppy or a senior who's seen multiple decades, any dog person like me knows the most valuable thing in the world is spending time with your pet.
Yep.
The farmer's dog makes it easy to keep them healthy, which can give you more quality years with your lovely dog.
Yeah, well, I've heard Farmer's Dog makes and delivers fresh, healthy dog food. And, you know, that's what everyone's looking for. It's recommended by vets, nutritionally balanced. It's made from human-grade ingredients, safe, clean kitchens. All that stuff matters.
Yeah. I mean, you love your dog. Why get the lousy food for your dog? Farmer's Dog is the best. Traditional dry and wet dog food options are extremely processed.
Sometimes
they use
dogs...
much lower quality. Yeah.
you put it in their bowl and they go, what is this kibble? And they knock it away. What is this canned goo?
Oh, yeah. I've had our dog, yeah, look at the bowl and then kind of crank its neck up and look at me. And it was like, really?
They go, really? Why don't you go first? You want a bite of this? Slop?
And it makes that sound.
Here you go, dog.
So Farmer's Dog isn't just higher quality food. They also send the food pre-portioned specifically for your dog based on their unique nutritional needs. It makes it easy to help your dog reach and stay at their ideal weight, David, and which is one of the biggest indicators of a full, healthy life. A fresh diet has been found to have all sorts of benefits, David, from healthier coat and skin, better breath, if you want to kiss your dog, and even easier digestion and smaller and better poops.
Let's look at a clip. It doesn't matter if your dog's young or old, it's always the right time to invest in their health for more happy years with your dog. Get 50% off your first box at farmersdog.com/fly.
Let the Farmer's Dog know we sent you. Use your code or click podcast after you sign up for your first box. Here's a question for you, because I have a few of my own personal thing, but in the studio with a sketch, what were the ones that just killed the hardest or made you laugh the hardest? And it's probably dozens of them, but I have one in mind that I was in that I didn't write, but it went to a level of laughter and involved an animal.
Oh.
Massive head wound hairy.
Oh, yeah.
Because an animal, you know,
a dog
was
licked the thing.
Bedlam.
But also the headline of it, massive head wound hairy. You kind of go, what? That's an odd sitcom.
You know, I thought that was, song. And Jack Handy said it had such an odd title, but I think it was a Schneider's video?
I think it was Schneider and probably a few other people helped, but I think Ron.
Maybe they gangbanged it.
Franken, too. Yeah. But that was just one of those things that they said between dress and air, like Robert asked the handler of the dog, well, what would make him really voracious? Well, so they didn't feed him. He was hungry and then put more stuff on my prosthetic head. So the dog went crazy. And because I was trained by you, I didn't want to be about the prosthesis coming off. So I went like that and just held it. But it was such a long battle between me and the dog. That
And you kept in it.
Yeah.
I stayed in it. I didn't want it to be about that.
And you didn't milk it. No. And I think that's the discipline of it. You know, that you transcend it. You're still playing.
You don't want it when it's killing that hard. It was like Pepperboy with Sandler. That was killing so hard on air. It just came out, and Sandler and I were just in a rhythm together.
Yeah.
And then Farley had one line, and on the dress show, it's
angrily.
Like, whoa, Pepper Boy. So then the air show, and of course, we're coming around the leg of Pepper or whatever, and Farley's like, well, thank you, Pepper Boy. But 10 times louder than I just said it. Yeah. Sandler turns purple, is turning away from the camera to me, and I whisper, I keep the Italian accent, and I go, don't the break.
Oh, yeah.
And he didn't break because I thought the sketch was going so good that
it's
I didn't want
ruin
it to.
Ruin it. Yeah.
If it's not going good, okay, you can break, but not if it's good.
But also, a sketch like Canteen Boy with Alec
around the campfire.
And that sleeping bag.
It wouldn't get too far these days. Yeah. Oh, my God.
That
even
was
back
a little...
then, it was resistance.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So when you get, obviously, it's probably still exciting. Would you ever want to stop, or if Dana and I can't take over, what do we do?
I think there's times when it's so frustrating and so whatever that you think. But, you know, when the warm-up is over, you know, and it's just you're hearing those last two songs, just the band, and you know those songs because they don't change much, and then you start to realize you're kind of excited. And that's never changed for me.
No, I don't. I think you're like anyone who's driven. You take the slings and arrows.
Yeah.
But I didn't really understand what you did until I guest hosted and was just kind of, you hang out with you kind of more.
Yeah.
And even if you're going out to dinner or whatever, you're constantly producing and constantly thinking and suggesting, and you're really bleeding over every show emotionally. So how do you decompress? I mean, are you, it's like.
Well, I think it's different when you have kids.
Because that they
you
take
know, you go to the party, you come back, and then somebody's jumping on your chest and you can still taste the beer. And but they're the priority and you're right. not. And that you get through that period. I think for me, and particularly in the pandemic, and for the whole of the 16 election and afterwards, mm-hmm. you sort of went, oh, people are counting on us. Talking about yeah. it and being there. And that was like a huge thing. And when we did those at-home shows in the pandemic,
yeah.
you know, the idea that – and it always – it's just the DNA of the show. We show up. So you mm-hmm. sort of feel mm-hmm. you – with 9/11 or whatever that you have yeah. to. And, you know, when Sandy Hook happened, you know, and McCartney was on the show and Marty Short. And it happened on the Friday – was when it,
that's you know, the toughest.
And I go, we don't have to do that. I don't know why we have to do that. And then Friday night, you can't not do it. You can't somehow figure it out. And there was a choir, a boys choir.
Oh, yes.
That was on for Wonderful Christmas Time with McCartney.
I remember that sketch.
Yeah.
Yes, that was hysterical.
And so Marty shouted at
Marty Short, yeah, trying yeah, yeah. You can't
Paul,
sing.
Is this where yeah. Paul talked yeah. about this?
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
And we were, it also happened to be the Friday night that they were shooting the last scene of 30 Rock. Alec on a boat down South Street Seaport. Mm-hmm. And I promised Tina and Robert and Alec that I'd be there for that. So I'm driving down the West Side Highway. Now we're, and I'm still trying to figure out and what I'm going to do because we don't have an opening. And Paul had said, McCartney had said, I can sing, you know, but I thought it's kids. You just can't do any show business.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? You could do Let It Be, whatever, but it would be somehow wrong.
Hmm.
And I called Lindsay and said, will you call the choir master and see if he's got a chart on Silent Night. And she called back, she said, they do. And they have the choir. Yeah.
And
so okay. it became like, we're going to just do that. I knew Phil Himes where he put the candles.
The great lighting designer.
Yeah. And it was like, so they do it. And then they say Live for New York. And it did not work at Dress. And I went,
yeah, boy.
Okay, now this is where you have to.
And then Marty told me the story because he was watching me, and he said, you were so puzzling with it while you were giving notes, like, what is it? And then dipped to black. Just dipped to black, that ends, and then the kids being happy and saying Live for New York was completely understandable and forgivable. It was, you couldn't bleed the one into the other.
Mm.
And so it was like, oh. And it worked. And you kind of go, you don't know, but you're like, when you're mixing tragedy in.
Very tough.
You need
tough.
Jokes, but also it just is, you're supposed to do it. So you figure it out.
And finding that line, you know.
And now for a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Let's talk about hustle culture. You know, the whole rise and grind, go big or go home thing. It's a lifestyle that may not be for you, but one that your money can handle thanks to Betterment. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. How? Their automated technology optimizes your investments again and again. With Betterment, your money is taking ice baths at 5 a.m. while you get your well-deserved rest. Your money downs protein smoothies and automatically reinvests your dividends all before you head out the door. Your money's a workaholic, but you don't have to be because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Paul McCartney, I thank you for introducing us in 1986.
And he's, you know, I think he doesn't get credit for being a rocker. Do you know what I mean? I think the cliche was that John was, and he was, you know, sentimental.
Soft, and so, yeah.
You know, but half the rock you know, Jojo, that's Paul.
Yeah, and Helter and, Skelter.
Yeah, Helter Skelter.
Yeah.
But
I think that he suffers from a good problem in a way. Too many great songs.
Yeah.
People hear Let It Be and Hey Jude. Yeah. They don't hear Here, There, and Everywhere.
Yeah.
And She's Leaving Home. He has so many melodies that you can't even remind people.
Yeah, and when people criticize him, because
you're very good friends.
Yeah. I go, no, he's Mozart. Leave it alone. Yeah,
unbelievable.
Just stop it. He writes great melodies. That's who he is.
Yeah.
And someday you'll get a perspective on it, but it's really – and I saw his last concert at the Meadowlands.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting, it was like 3 hours.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, things you thought you'd see for sure weren't in the show.
Right.
It was really well thought out, mm-hmm. and fresh and brilliant. And about 10, 15 minutes before it ended, it started to rain. And this is at, you know, the Meadowlands.
Mm-hmm.
No one moved. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody just sat
sort
there.
Sort of a once in a lifetime.
And you go, and it was the last time he was going to perform, and in America anyway. And it was just magical. And for mm-hmm. me, it was, I mean, Love Me Do is I'm a Freshman.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? So that's the point of entry. And I think it's all, you know, in the Stones I saw in London this summer too, and just phenomenal.
Love them. Yeah.
And it's just that thing of they're, you want them to be that.
Yes.
You don't need them to, you know, and if Sinatra was singing.
Yeah, you want to hear Summer Wind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I do think they'd get back the documentary kind of couch Paul in a better light. I think there's a little bit more understanding because he could sing all the harmonies, he could play all the instruments, and he could write songs. So it makes sense, as you might say, Fingerprints would be, he'd be collaborating with Ringo.
Yeah.
And I used to do that as a joke impression. So the guy goes in there and he goes, he's walking along, and then he's doing it and get back to George Harrison. And so the boy genius kind of thing, and Lennon was off on his own journey at that point. But
and also, that in the concert, now Peter Jackson gave him a clip so he could sing with Lennon.
And, yes. Well, how is that?
So you realize how young Lennon was.
I know. He's just 28.
I know. And you just go, oh, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah. And Paul was, when I was watching him on the rooftop, when John was doing, you know, his song, Don't Let Me Down, Paul is so engaged. Not cynical at all. And he's doing this incredible bass line, and they're smiling and laughing. And for all of us, romantically, because of what they meant to us, we want John and Paul. And for Paul, his favorite part of the thing was them joking around and laughing.
Yeah.
Because that's what he wants.
We were. Yeah, he said that's how we want to be remembered. Yeah.
But, you know, time heals all wounds.
What else people
well,
make
don't you have that with the cast that you were with?
I mean, 1,000%. We could run into anybody of our time.
Well, also Sandler's in the middle of it churning them out. Do you know what I mean? And it's always, and you just go, Rob Schneider's living on it. On a couch there, you know. suddenly gets into a movie.
Rob talked about them getting famous, and then all of a sudden we had girlfriends, you know. And there was something, or who thought of Cantori, the one where I had Victoria's legs over my...
Oh, Cantori.
Who really wrote that. But you're right, it is like being in the Marines or something, not literally, no, don't send me letters. But yeah, you see a castmate, even running into... Tracy Morgan, he goes, hey, alum, you know, there's a esprit de corps. Sure.
I think Bill Murray said it once, you just can't explain what it's like being out there looking into the eyes of somebody else who's in that same scene that isn't, it's maybe not working, or maybe it's working way better.
Like paddling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, or working way better than you thought. The sparkle, just that contact of being in that heightened reality.
Mm-hmm.
With that level of intensity, you can't really explain. And I'm sure pro athletes have that. I think it's, you know, dancers have it.
Which is another great thing about the show is that you started having non-performers host the show. I guess you had pro athletes in the 70s, but that's a reality show in itself. If the pro athlete is bombing or killing, it's just a pro, you know, Michael Jordan's going to try to be a sketch player.
Fran Tarkenton was
in the
70s. But also, I had Ralph Nader. I had a lot of people that I just admired. And so
Ralph Nader, smart.
For his entrance, he was getting off the elevator on 8.
Hmm.
And I said, I think if you were eating a hot dog, That will help. Because he was so, he said, but I don't eat hot dogs. I know. That's why I think it'll work.
It's part of the
being sort of startling.
Ultimate straight man.
And he got the laugh. And it was like,
he lit up.
It's exciting. Just, oh, yeah. It's ridiculous.
They compete. I mean, Peyton Manning, I mean, they give each other, they're
Bill
like.
Bill Russell. And he, you know, was.
Oh, he had one.
Yeah. He was fantastic. I was a huge fan. But it was just like, you could call people and they'd say, okay.
You know what I mean? I didn't even know Bill Russell.
You didn't know who watched the show because we were mostly in 8H. And then you go, oh, they're watching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Wayne Gretzky was so charming.
I had Broderick Crawford was in some FBI movie.
Oh, yeah. Broderick Crawford.
And I go, I called him in and I said, he was living in Ohio. And I called him and I said, we're doing the show. And it's called, said, yeah, I think I know it. Yeah. So you'd have to be here on the Monday and that, you know, would be this. And, I'm trying to reassure a man who does not need to be reassured. And, he said, all right, send me the ticket.
Send me the ticket for the plane ticket?
An airplane, you know, an airplane, you know, and it's just, what I'm getting at is people just volunteered to come, you know, from
Robert Mitchum. Charlton Heston.
Robert Mitchum had one of my favorite monologue lines.
Yes.
About live and it's so dangerous and what, you don't know what could go wrong. And he said, and I thought, what's the worst that could happen? I won't get that 119th movie.
Yeah, I remember that. And he landed it perfect. And he was so old school. He had a half gallon of Jack Daniels in his dressing room. He's an old fashioned movie star.
Yeah.
Incredible to be
Walken
around.
Walken had that too.
Walken is magic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Walken. That, you know, with Cowbell, I think I was just there doing a guest shot and that thing, hearing Walken come out, I need more Cowbell. I mean, it was so, the cast, I mean, I know that Will had done it before, but once you got Walken and then Will, that's why it's just iconic.
Yeah, no, and also the Continental, which he used to do.
Continental was a big
was
one,
an actual show that he would see. It was a local local New York 15-minute show where this guy was on, and he wanted to do it. So he knew it perfectly.
God, he was good.
And that single camera
ball. Yeah, with a white glove on.
Do you remember Bear Suits Are Funny and Bears as well?
Was that a fake story?
It was Christopher Walken at the meeting.
Yeah.
And we all went around pitching him, and he's kind of staring up being Christopher Walken. And then you said, Chris. And I remember him saying this in specific. If you remember, he just said non sequitur, Bear Suits Are Funny. And Bears as well. Bear Suits Are Funny. And then he thought, and Bears as well. I just thought that was the greatest non-sequitur.
And Lauren probably goes, write it up.
Write it up. Let's put you in a bear suit. Yeah. But that was the thrill of being around him. He was
There were a lot of people that you were either surprised or couldn't wait to meet or whatever.
And John Goodman could do no wrong. Alec Baldwin.
Third show was Alec's first show. Mm-hmm. And that was the Green Hilly. And it was... He did the mimic. He did all these.
One of the things that I loved.
It's great.
But this is a Wayne's World thing, which you'll remember.
I'll tune in.
He was doing Green Hilly.
I remember Green Hilly.
You guys were in the conference room waiting to see me about something. And and Franken was there waiting to see me. And I can't remember what I was doing. But Franken said out loud, can you imagine what it'd be like if we had a really good-looking guy?
Oh, I remember this one. Oh boy, yeah, that would go over.
And both Dana and Mike were like, kind of looked at each other.
Well, I don't. I thought Mike was more Dana, but maybe I was too. I never considered. I mean, I didn't have a chin. I can't be. I have a limit on how good-looking I can be without a chin. Now I've got this. The ladies like.
Oh, he got up for an Emmy for that first show. Alec was kidding every sketch, and it was a. He came out of Hunt for Red October, and I was just like, I went into the meeting going, oh, this guy's a movie star. Like, I was new.
Oh, yeah. And I remember, did I interrupt you just then? Victoria would say, the second time Alec came in, non sequitur, Victoria, like on a Tuesday, I'm not going to do it again. Not this week. I'm not going to do it. And I go, what are you going to do? I'm not going to fall in love with him. I'm not going to fall in love with him. And then by Friday, I fell in love with him.
Yeah, get behind
me. But he sees eyes and he, you know, he's just.
He was a stud. Yeah.
And,
but
you know,
there were so many home run hitters on that when I got there and all the writing and the Smigels and Handys, and we talk about it all the time. But it was just hard to, Lauren actually hung in there with me because it took a while to get my footing. I was trying to write and trying to write for you. It's hard to write for other people. I was just a stand up. So it's just to get it going and then got a little Hollywood Minute, then got some stuff. And it just, thank God got in there, because it took me longer than most. And
yeah, because one, he was in there too.
Yeah, this
so
trick?
You weren't going to get those parts.
Believe David me, let's go through behind. My diary. I'll show you.
David would sit behind me, and Lauren would say, "David's behind. On deck." If you ever,
David, ready? Dana looks tired. You're like, no.
I'd look back.
I mean, Reed's reading something from Huxley's.
David's ready whenever you're ready to go.
David, you were funny the first. Yeah, I bet you. Truly.
Thank you.
And there was David's never a moment where I didn't think it was going to work.
Yeah. Thank and you're
I'm
last
often
2 years.
But that time I was.
Have you seen cast members? I mean, there's so many that audition. Yeah, I mean, you couldn't say, I guess, if you felt like someone you missed on or someone. I'm sure there's some that just obviously get famous
I think what
later.
Happens is if there's no slot, do you know what I mean? If
yeah.
somebody does
we don't
kind
think
of what
of
you do, mm-hmm. then it's really hard.
Actually, I think Nick Kroll, we talked to him and he auditioned. And he was the first one. It made sense to me where he goes, they had
great.
Me.
Yeah.
He goes, they
great.
Had every
yeah.
move I do, and there's just I'm an extra. So I'm an extra
well,
guy.
He looked at Adam Sandberg and yeah. Bill Hader, and he yeah. locked him off. And he goes, and we talked about this pack. It wasn't personal. It was just yeah. those. And
it
then
could, 3 years earlier, it would have worked. 3 years later, but yeah. he was like, even
but
he
brilliant
knew it, he goes,
guy. Yeah. I mean, really, really funny.
So that's just the way it is there. And when we're auditioning, we don't think that we're just saying, oh, we want to be on and. When Rob and I came on, kind of writer, performers, or maybe just writers. I mean, no one tells anybody anything. So Bernie just said, hey, just go there.
And also, Rob was doing, making copies.
Oh, yeah. He fucking,
you know,
yeah.
And which was a huge somehow story. That just caught on.
Yeah, yeah.
And you don't know why it catches on, but
yeah.
And then you run it into the ground.
I mean, first night.
And then we run it into the ground.
It's just
the catchphrase. Oh, the jealousy hit an all-time high when Sting came on looking like a stud. And then we're singing like a ding-dong. And then he go, you want to be in Cop Machine? He's like, yeah. I'm like, God damn. So it just, you have Sting to sit on sidelines and go, good job. And you go, what am I doing here? It's
making
tough.
Copies.
Yeah, but you know what? And you can't argue it. It's funny. It was original.
Yeah.
No. Rob has a musical
Rob is a great
talent.
Writer, too. He's great. He's musical and he can write. And
it was so fun to be around these movie stars that are nervous and scared about to go in and do
or something. Musicians
or your yeah. Sting. I remember we were doing the elevator sketch and we're in between. He goes, "How's my hair?" He's asking me. You know, it's like, and they're really vulnerable. And they got the, and, you know, I told Michael Jordan, if you space out, just read it off the card. It's a very fascinating part
they're
of this
just
whole
flailing. They don't know what to do. They're scared and. If you get to talk to them, they don't know that we're lowly writers. They're like, what do I do here? And I'm like, are you talking to me? I don't know what the fuck's going on.
Jeremy Irons.
I remember his show.
Yeah.
Hello.
Was Saturday, but the Oscars were the Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And he was nominated for Best Actor.
Oh, wow.
And I knew him from a play he'd done with Mike Nichols. And, he was a great actor, obviously.
Yeah.
And they were doing a Sherlock Holmes sketch. And I won't name the writer, but they're like in there teaching him an English accent.
Right.
You know, like, no, it's more this. And you just go, you know, and you just go, well, you know, he's, and then he won Best Actor.
In the yeah.
But you just go, are you think? But the passion and blindness of comedy writers.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Of like, no, you don't get it. It's like this, and you go, and so confident. But performers have witnessed and felt death up there, so they never are confident because they actually know the job. Mm. But writers are like, no,
come on,
you know. And I remember George Meyer when he was on the show, and he was
show dying,
and he would just. You'd sort of see himself throwing his body against the wall at dress rehearsal when someone blew a line, you know? And that's why animation works better, you know, because
they
do
obey.
Exactly what they're told. But performers can either give you that exhilaration of like they took it off the paper and now it's this other thing that will always be that, as opposed to you got the laugh at the end of the line, you know.
I think I was doing a courtroom thing as Johnny Carson, as Johnny Cochran or something, and Smigel had written it, and he's putting all these birds and things on me. Like, and it's 5, 4, 3, and it's a cockatoo. I go, Robert, enough. I got to do the thing. You know? Come on. Robert is relentless that way, which we love him for. He's
He wants to be performing.
Oh, he loves to perform. Yeah. But we had some great collaborations together. He was good with rhythms and, you know.
Yeah.
So So this new season.
Uh-huh.
Excited.
How is your, I mean, you're pulling up your socks, you're feeling good, you're just eyes wide open?
I think we, you know, it was, you know, we had, to, we ended the season with goodbyes, you know, particularly Kate and
Actually
AD
said
and,
it, yeah.
Yeah, and Pete. And so dealing with that, it just had that valedictory thing, which we did with Kristen Wiig as well. We've done it a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And it just, you just slipped out in the dead of night.
I blame it on Bernie.
You got to go now,
Irish
kid,
exit.
Or you'll never go.
No, I don't know why I did that. I, you know, a lot of people on this, just anecdotally, without naming names, kind of like, why did I leave? Because some of them left voluntarily.
Yeah.
And why was I so angry?
Yeah.
And what was I thinking? And for me personally, I had so many inputs coming at me.
Yeah.
I got too hot, too big. It's like Mickey Rooney in The Twilight Zone because of Wayne's World and all the political stuff. So I was sort of lost, but yeah. But I was envious and thought it was sweet when Kate and people got a little send off. It's sweet.
Yeah. And also, I think there's something about it can't be everything, the show. And it is for so long, and then you. But if you're ever going to leave, you know, and so
you have to leave at some point.
Yeah,
but except
it's
for
also that there, you're never going to feel that intensity of that because it's its own sport. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And you're in Hall of Fame.
Never as hard.
Yeah,
I went to a sitcom, and it was great people, great actors, and I go, this is just not the same. It's just not as tough. And people writing for me, and I go, this is unbelievable.
And also, it's all SNL is all risk, you know. Like, there's no safety net, and there's also no guarantee that it's going to work on air.
Or you're going to, or you're going to be on.
I mean,
like, you're walking through the hallway, and it's like 20-1, and they go, and you're in your outfit, and they go, "Gap Girls is cut."
You can't get on the air,
and you're in the dress.
I already made it this far.
Go back to your rooms immediately.
Yeah, anything that's cut on it, that's the tough because that's again, there's no guarantees. And
now we tend to play some of those.
Oh, yeah, I guess you guys play online. Dress or you can play.
Well, doesn't Saturday Night Live, I think I read this, gets like, I don't know, almost 2 billion YouTube views. Isn't it number one?
YouTube foreign is huge.
It must be huge.
And what's happened is Lewis Hamilton, the race car driver, was at a party last season. And he talked to me, he said, well, I grew up watching the show. And I go, you're in England. How do you watch the show? You know, you forget that it's all online and people – And then I think when they see the contemporary stuff, then they go back and look at the, you know, the shows from.
Yeah.
And there was a period about 15 years ago when writers coming in who had not been alive for the first, you know, 5 or 10 years, we had a server where they could just go on. So sometimes people would watch 2 or 3 shows before on Tuesday night before they started. Ah. But I'll use an example. I'll say, well, I think we did that with Bill Murray. And then now I look out into a room of like, okay. All right.
Who's Bill Murray?
I'm talking about 45 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, like, so it's a.
I think Peacock probably has all the old ones, maybe.
Everyone has it on their laptop. I mean, every sketch, right? Because when I was there meeting John Mulaney and Bill Hader, I'm like, oh, what do you guys want to do? They go, we like Mickey Rooney. When I did Mickey Rooney, I'm like, really? And they brought it up immediately. So.
And Bill, you know, when I've talked to Bill somewhat seriously about his time there, He was frightened.
He talked about the panic attacks.
And I go, it's so interesting because I'm pretty good at reading that stuff.
Yeah.
But he was so good on air and so original. And I mean, he auditioned with Vincent Price.
Yes.
And
who does that?
And James Mason. Now, they were in my childhood. I don't know how we get it. And things got to Oklahoma later, but it was just a so original and right away. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and Vinny Viderci and all of that stuff. And you go, so such an original comedy voice.
Yeah.
You know, we know what else he can do, but he was truly funny.
So good.
Oh, yeah.
Voice
his
on
rhythms
like that.
And the Vincent Price thing, it didn't even matter if you knew Vincent Price, just
no
that his party's being ruined and he's being very trying to pull it together. Well, okay, thank you. And it was Toadie Fields. I don't know who was coming to
Toadie
the room.
Fields.
Toadie Fields. Yes. But he said he was just, you know, almost in tears in the bathroom and on 8H.
Yeah.
You know, if anyone wanted to see Church Chat, my hand was drenched in sweat, you know. there's a lot of controlling adrenal.
And you don't know. 5 seconds before, you still don't know whether it's going to work or whether – but there is that thing of like it brings out the best in you. And when you win, you really can feel it.
Yeah. Well, you can't – there's nothing like the first big laugh to relax you. You're just not relaxed. And the very first time I said, well, isn't that special – I got such a big laugh that I finally went, ah.
But also, there's a period in which they like, you know, you probably have 3 or 4 years where they just get a laugh at whatever you do because they think you know more than they do. Mm-hmm. And and they're just so excited to see you. And that's been happening for the last 10 years or so. Mm-hmm. You just could kind of feel in the room. And I'm going, I don't think that's going to play. And they go, no, of course it's going to play.
Yeah, because it's these guys.
It's those people doing it.
Qué pasa? Qué pasa?
Is that what they say when you walk into sushi?
I think that's what's happening in Spanish. Qué pasa? Qué pasa? David Ospero.
I had a difficulty learning German in high school. It's a very tough language. I did it through textbooks and a teacher. I would have rather had Rosetta Stone.
You know, you not being able to learn German is very, very interesting.
But stupid. Now, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program. We know this. Available on desktop as an app. Truly immerses you in the language you want to learn.
Yeah, this is planning a trip to Italy. And I think Rosetta Stone is my ticket to speak a better language.
Hey,
I want a pizza pie. But I'll be saying it in Italian. Hey, I want a pizza pie. Sounds like
that's better
English, but it's still that was.
They
Italian.
Say, do you want to sound perfectly fluent, or do you want to sound like Ratatouille?
Honestly, trusted experts for 30 years, David, with millions of users and 25 languages offered. You want to hear some?
Yeah, the
Spanish,
big ones.
Spanish, French, Italiano, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese,
careful,
Dutch, Arabic, Polish.
Fast language acquisitions, Rosetta Stone.
Should I read that straight?
It immerses you in many ways. No English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and you think in the language, Dana. That's the hard part.
No, I do like their process. The intuitive process picks up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's designed for long-term retention, David, because we all took Spanish in high school, and all we can say is donde está la biblioteca.
Yeah.
I can find a library, but nothing else. Rosetta Stone is a game changer.
It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. It's convenient. We said the desktop, the app options, audio companion. You can do it offline. It's amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages. For any and all trips and language needs in life, that's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. That is a steal. I'll say that in English, a steal.
Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Fly on the Wall listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
Visit rosettastone.com/fly. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/fly today. True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. Now, you're out there, you have acres and acres, hundreds of acres. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. No. Weed control, which you hate, fertilization, aeration.
Can't stand it.
Among others. They'll do all that. So you can do literally anything else. Dana's out there like Yellowstone. You have better things to do in your free time. I know you do. You don't want to focus on lawn care.
True Green is too good to be true, is what I'm saying. But it is true. Right, David? Because you're going to have more time to do things that you want to focus on.
All the hard work. And it gets you to a great lawn. That's what you want. You take care of everything else you got to do in your life. You're very busy. Let True Green take care of this one thing. Get it off your plate.
You know what? I do have some space. I want to put some grass down. I'll call you later, True Green.
Talk to True Green. Where can listeners purchase or learn more? You go to truegreen.com. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour.
Whoa.
They offer a satisfaction guaranteed, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. That is such a cool thing.
Good job, True Green. You're nailing it. There was once when we were in the Monday meeting and I thought, I don't know if we had like a dry spell, but I was in the Monday meeting and the host who shall remain nameless, but I go, I think Mike and Dana are more famous than the host. And you know, the cast gets so big sometimes like that and they're so well known. And we always, I mean, you always have to this day, huge hosts and great people that come in from all areas. And Kim Kardashian did a great job and that was sort of out of the blue. And just that's great that you keep doing that and something's working there with A, they all want to do it still and get that one thing because they hear about it. And they all walk away going, it went too fast and it was too great. And if I do it again, I know what I'm doing this time.
But also hosting everybody, you know, there's 150 people. They're all there to make you look good.
Yeah.
So you're the center of it. And it's just a different experience.
Unless you're Steven Seagal, you believe that.
Steven Seagal, my favorite host. So when did you, like, you guys started, which was kind of interesting, having the women play men. Because that wasn't happening.
Yeah.
And that just sort of happened organically. And Kate McGinnon did a lot of men and other things. Was that just sort of happened? You went with it. It's just a new flavor.
If you're me, you're always going to go with the funniest take.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So it doesn't. Gender isn't the issue. It's just who's got that voice.
Well, Kate had the audience in the palm of her hand, and she
Melissa
was so
McCarthy
great that
played Sean Spicer.
Yeah. She played Sean Spicer,
and Trump was furious about it. From what
Trump?
Yeah,
they're taking it.
Well,
it's not good.
It's like they're having a woman play you. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, wow, yeah.
Very old-fashioned maleness stuff.
I think at some point he liked what Alec was doing.
He did?
No, I think at the beginning, maybe.
The first 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Well, it was just unique because we knew that Alec obviously didn't favor his politics, and then he started to not like Alec, and it was a public thing.
Yeah.
And before, it was sort of hidden if Daryl Hammond's doing Al Gore, no one really knows his politics or whatever. So that was a new kind of flavor. As well.
Yeah, and also we did things that we wouldn't do now, you know, with John Goodman playing Linda Tripp or whatever, you know, like, so it was just, you know, and I think you sort of, standards and boundaries change. And, you know, things that you could do, Franken did a...
Franken always stretched the envelope.
a piece, I think it was with Garrett Morris and Julian Bond.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about it was a black talk show, and it had a line about that light-skinned black people are you know smarter than dark-skinned.
Oh you God!
Know. It's Franken.
Hello,
Franken. Garrett would you know like what? And but what I'm getting at is we could then. There was no malice in it. It was just like that thing of what can't you say?
And in regular TV world.
Yeah.
I like when anyone gained 7 pounds the next week, Farley was playing them.
Yeah.
That was like, his job was like, it was always brutal.
I used to say this thing about when you guys were filming, because you were up in Toronto, I was down there doing the show, and then I'd come up and whatever, but I'd say, and I'd see dailies, and... Your way of handling stress was, you know, you'd have a banana and whatever, and it'd be like that. And Farley's would just be to continue. You'd lose weight and he'd gain weight. But the weight in the frame stayed the same.
Yeah.
It always looked normal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We'd go back and forth from Toronto with Eric Newman on the flight with us.
Yes.
Where's his? Are you going to ever write a book, Lorne? Because Meghan Markle did.
No. I think the hard part is
you can't tell the truth or you don't want to bury people.
Yeah.
And also, then when you get to be my age, did that actually happen? Do you know what I mean?
You have to cross-check yourself, too.
Well, it's just you go, your memory. I have a good memory. It's not that.
Incredible.
It's just like, well, what? Did that actually happen?
100%, because Dana and I even would tell stories and we would disagree. And I'm like, God, you're right. And I go, I remembered it this whole time a certain way and it was not. And it's just something that happens like that. So you just don't know.
Yeah. And that's why they do all that stuff in murder trials. It's like the people swear they saw this person leave and no, they didn't. Yeah. And you just go, and then they execute you.
And you go, no way, we figured it out.
And when it comes to taking credit, I think it's a normal human thing to kind of trend your memory towards favoring yourself a little bit. But you want to cross-check it with other people. Am I remembering this right? Like, was there ever a horse on the show or a horse on 8H?
Alive?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, lots of horses.
Because during dinner, I was over in my cubicle arranging things, and I saw Keith Richard walking by himself, walking up to the horse, and he held the horse's head in his hand. He said, "Look at you. You're a fucking horse." I swear to God, that's what he said. And then he just went back to his dressing room.
Meandered back.
But I was thinking, did I remember that correctly? Yeah. There was a horse.
The first
lots
time we did it was when Mr. Ed died. It was a news story, and Chevy could do Mr. Ed's voice, and Wilbur. We got the horse in the studio, and then he's interviewing the horse in the last interview, you know, and he'd be doing both parts. So when the horse was talking
it would be Chevy. Must have killed
Chevy.
Horses, giraffes, we had.
Monkeys.
We had a camel about 4 years ago. No, maybe longer now. And it got off. Every camel works at Christmas. It's not like you can get hold of
it's
camel.
They all work. The manger thing.
So there was
thing,
one
yeah.
that was – they lied about how big it was. And Kenny Amon was
they're
like –
they're scary.
Wow, Kenny Amon. Hey, David.
So he came off the elevator and then the hump – you can call it a hump, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
The hump got stuck in the tiles of,
tall.
Of the ceiling.
Yeah.
So it was just stuck. There was no getting it there. And then we're going, but we're on the air. We have to get. So I think they got a donkey, made it look like a camel. It was like that kind of thing.
Yeah. It's an amazing
did
show.
Did Bill Murray punch Chevy, or is that a fake story from the old days?
They got into a fight.
They were
that
probably
was. Year and three. John, I think, provoked it a little bit.
You know? I love John.
It was probably my mistake because I was bringing Chevy back to host. Yeah. But it was a season and a half after he left. And which just made sense. The musical guest on that show was the very young Billy Joel.
Ah,
I
love
it. And they got into a skirmish just in front, you know,
front
like
of the doors,
by the page desk. Yeah. And then Chevy had to come out and do the monologue.
Oh, wow.
So it was like
both 6'4", basically. Yeah. So
and it was just the show was sort of white hot, and it was John always felt in Lemmings, which is the time they'd worked together before the show, John was the star and Chevy was not. And so – and was like sort of third billing. And Chris – you know, is involved in that show too, Chris Guest. And you kind of go, so there was already like, this is how we see you. And then Chevy exploded.
But Chevy was such a monster star.
But also because he said his name, you know, on Update.
Right. I'm Chevy Chase and you're not. Yeah. Great.
Well, and he's a big dude, great looking dude.
Yeah.
Movie star by then, right? Coming back after.
I always tell people when I run into Chevy, we're going to have Chevy on the podcast. I try to compliment him, but sometimes he doesn't know. He's a little, but I tell people if you want to know how great he is as a film actor, look at Caddyshack, where Bill Murray is in his full prime groundsman character with the mouth off to the side. And they're together going through this scene, and Chevy does his Buster Keaton or whatever you want to call how still his face was. And then his physicality, it's like a master class in comic film acting.
He gets beat up a lot. And
people forget what a
seems
great
like old times,
movie
huge.
Actor and star, you know. I mean, just
– It's a thing. It was like such a huge thing.
Yeah.
You know, by the end of the first season. And it was like way too much to handle. And it became particularly hard for he and I because we wrote together. And so we were very close. And so it was heading in two different directions.
And then he became a movie star.
Yeah. Sure,
but then saying ever since he kind of, even when he would come to host, he'd say, don't leave too soon. He felt, he wished he'd done more seasons because that was that one.
It was a, emotionally, he wasn't ready to leave. And also, he was that other thing, really proud of what we'd done. With the show. So
it then was he had like, to see it still be huge and,
and grow with the Blues Brothers and Lorraine.
And when, listen, when at the end of the first season, I won three Emmy Awards, one for Lily Tomlin and Richard Pryor thing I'd done the year before.
Nice.
And Richard Pryor, who I'd worked with, we had dinner at Dantana's. So, you know, we were you know, feeling pretty good about ourselves. And he was offered a three-picture deal at Universal. And he said, this is what we wanted. Do you know what I mean? Comedians did not get movies.
Yeah, right.
You know, and it was like, and I thought, I've just been through my championship season. It's not going to, I wrote everything I ever wanted to write all, you know, at least twice in that season. So it was like, oh, you could get off stage now and, you know.
Wow.
And I went, I can't do that. Everybody else has to stay for 5 years. You know, it was that. But I think that if you'd said to me then that I would be still doing it and that I would have found so many other things that were there that I didn't know at the beginning, that were not part of the original design or whatever, things that it grew into or that it does, or that its influence would be just as strong politically as it is.
And
music
keep discovering super talented people and being launched from your show to have careers.
Also, they kind of find us now.
Yeah.
You know, in the 70s, you had to go out and recruit, but I think people.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, I liked it staying alive because there was a time there, like obviously when we were on, if you missed the show, you had to get the rerun 6 months later. And if you missed that, you had to catch, it was luckily on the best of in the summer, but there was a time there when people hadn't seen some of the old ones, and then it was on the E channel, and then now you can see it all. So it's
It's interesting. It's like Emma Stone grew up on Best of Gilda Radner.
Wow.
And those sort of best of, you know, like all those best of, you're in them. I mean, but we stopped doing them because the VCR thing.
It wasn't really.
And they're all on YouTube, pretty much.
But people wore those out. I think Kate McKinnon had one of those.
One of the last ones, probably.
Oh, best
they
of?
Had like three movies, which is
great. Yeah.
Reality TV has hit a new high on Hulu. From executive producer Jimmy Kimmel, the all-new Hulu original series High Hopes is finally here for your viewing pleasure.
The Hulu original reality series follows two budding entrepreneur brothers and their hilarious half-baked employees at one of the fastest-growing cannabis dispensaries in Hollywood. This workplace comedy showcases the highs and even more highs of the competitive marijuana industry.
More than just coworkers, the owners and bud tenders in High Hopes are one dope family.
You'll fall in love with these quirky characters as they pursue career aspirations, love, and fame, all under a slightly hazy cloud.
All episodes of the new reality series High Hopes are now streaming only on Hulu. Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas.
Loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com/welcometonow.
Well, Lauren, we'll take a 20-minute break
and start the podcast.
I just, just want to thank you for doing this.
You know, we
this.
Didn't talk about anybody dying.
We didn't. There was a lot.
No.
Do you want to?
No. Oh. No, I'm good. I mean, but we were there for a lot of that.
A lot of big ones,
Two of my bandmates, for sure.
Yeah.
And I was just at Catalina Island, and that's where Phil's ashes are.
Do you remember, John at the memorial?
John Lovitz?
Yeah.
Kind of.
What'd he do?
Just talked about Phil.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, well,
but they couldn't have been closer.
Yeah,
and they could. You know, that sketch, which is a growling sketch that we finally did.
Yeah. Know, yeah. What's the word on the street?
What's the word
they
on
were
the
doing the gangster thing so much before we premiered with the first show.
Yeah.
Remember Dynamite on Tony's? Did they do anything else? He was like, "How you doing? What are you? What are they saying? What do you mean? What are they saying?" You know, they just did it spastically.
Love it. Still so funny. I see him all the time.
And in Three Amigos, I did it with them. That was scene. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, but John is. Yeah, he's supernaturally funny. He's a.
Do you see him? Do you see John?
I do see John. Yeah. Yes.
I talk to him a lot. He's on the road or he's at a hotel with Jerry, his dog Jerry Bruckheimer, and you know he's just there's only one John.
He still is
so
funny
you're
at
talking
dinner.
To Lauren.
One of the most naturally funny people.
He is really. Yeah. And
where did that come from?
People like when they see him, they all know him. He looks exactly the same. They all come up. I love seeing him.
He came back to play somebody like 3-4 years ago in a cold opening. And he destroyed the dress. And I said, John, you got to make sure you're on your mark before you go, you know, like that. And he was just off camera, just slightly off camera. The live audience was going nuts. But you know what I thought?
Heartbreaking.
Because it's still all natural. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Right. So that's the moment he felt to do it, as opposed to 3, 2, 1, get to my spot and then do it?
Yeah. Like Hartman would have been on camera for sure.
Who?
Hartman.
Oh, Phil was, I mean, his binder was so meticulous, his office meticulous. He was in so many sketches. And then he would just in between takes or when we're rehearsing, he would just be looking at Evan Rude.
I couldn't believe he'd look at something else. I go, you're not thinking
about this. He'd look at boats and his plane.
He had
he was
wired.
Renaissance person. Yeah.
But
smart.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, buddy.
It's been great getting to know you guys.
Yes, it's nice to meet you.
I really feel like I know you now.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
No, thank you for doing this, Lauren. Goodbye.
Hey, what's up, flies? What's up, fleas? What's up, people that listen? We want to hear from you and your dumb questions.
Questions, ask us anything. Anything you want.
You can email us at flyonthewall@cadence13.com.
We have a question here.
Great.
Who will take over for Lorne? How will the show adjust and move forward?
Well,
75 people asked this question.
Yeah, 75 plus.
From the same email.
We get a lot of questions. This is the question we get a lot. Okay, I would say we did touch on it. I don't think he's going to want to talk about it because it means retiring, and I don't think anyone wants to retire. I don't know if he can handle the stress or if he wants to give it away or if people will say, oh, ever since Lauren left, it's just a great excuse to say, oh, the show went
we
down.
Did, and it was kind of a joke, but sort of serious. We offered ourselves up to take over as co-producers, and Lauren's eyes got real big, and he just went, right.
Right. And I said, or we could just take the money and we do nothing.
Just get the credit.
Yeah.
And then stir that credit and then work at the podcast.
And then just see if it does.
I'll say
it on its own.
Philosophically, off the top of my head, I do think it's tough to replace Lorne because he works in so many invisible ways. And that is the relationship with the bosses. Because I'm for years, and we touched on this, but
it's
very
complicated.
They're always, when the show's ratings are down, sorry, I had a little nip. When the show's ratings are down, they want to change it. It's got to be taped or you can't. Lorne was so vigilant about keeping it exactly the same. That's why you go back and it's a little bit creepy in there because it's like going back to high school.
It's cool. Now, the only thing different now when you go back is all the photos when you walk down that first hall are all so historical because it's every big star doing a big sketch and you're like, whoa, all right here.
Yep.
All the history of almost 50 years. So I don't know. You know, there's names. There's Tina Fey. They're perfectly capable if she wanted it.
Steve Higgins.
There's Higgins. There's Downey. There's who wants the job? Who can handle it? Remember Apatow talked about it?
He's a producer. Apatow could do it.
Maybe he wouldn't be as close enough to the show so he'd get some resistance, but...
But
he obviously knows what he's doing.
Lorne took over as such a young man. It feels like it needs young. And yet the show is already adjusting just culturally. It's evolving. You know, when I was on there, it was like 6 cast members. Now there has to be
600.
20 or 25. Well, they were 600 for a while. okay, I'll ask you a question, David. Who would be the biggest surprise you could think of that would take over for Lorne? I have my answer, but let's hear yours.
no, they're all
the
so
biggest
offensive.
Surprise.
They're so
oh, they're offensive?
Oh,
why are they offensive?
Because it sounds like they don't have a good career if I say their name. Like,
well, no,
so
they're
funny.
Becoming executive producers.
Okay, what's yours? Then I'll decide.
John Lovitz. Introducing now.
You?
You're in the cold out. Opening. Do you know what a cold opening is? It's the beginning. No, oh, that was my jokey
Maybe
one.
Maybe you should try acting.
So that would be my surprise one. But the truth is, nobody knows. It's 3 years from now. And but the 50th is.
We did talk about the 50th. Though.
And Lorne has not announced his retirement officially at all.
No.
It just feels like 50 is like, you know, it's halfway to 100.
Dana, why are you pushing me out the door?
I just want your couch. That's what I told him. He's got popcorn. He's a popcorn guy. Tootsie Rolls.
Well, I guess
we actually don't have an answer for this question.
Question's petering out, but yeah. We don't like to stop talking. So thank you for asking, and the answer is we don't know.
We could have said 3-4 minutes ago, we don't know. Instead, we're narcissists, and we like the sound of our own voice. So thank you, 75 plus.
Yeah, we want to cram one
all
more.
All from the same email address. You know who you are.
It's Lorne himself.
What did they say?
Lorne@lorne.com. Okay, thanks, guys.
This has been a podcast presentation of Cadence 13. Please listen, then rate, review, and follow all episodes. Available now for free wherever you get your podcast.
No joke, folks.
Fly on the Wall has been a presentation of Cadence 13, executive produced by Dana Carvey and David Spade, Chris Corcoran of Cadence 13, and Charlie Finan of Brillstein Entertainment.
The show's lead producer is Greg Holtzman, with production and engineering support from Serena Regan and Chris Basil of Cadence 13.